During and after the chaos of the Great War, the Imperial War Graves Commission intended to remember every single casualty, either by a headstone or a name on the memorial that took several years to build after the fighting had ended. And with no modern-day technology to help cross-reference and check facts, sometimes casualties were wrongly commemorated or even missed altogether. Today, we've got a whole vast new army of determined and dedicated historians. Some of them are amateur and some of them are professional. And they're helping discover and correct these unintended errors. Sometimes a casualty was recorded as missing, and he's buried beneath the headstone that says known unto God in one of the cemeteries, or is simply missed altogether from the records. In this podcast today, the podcast that I, Terry Wenham, called Tales from the Battlefields, we're going to call on a couple of historians to tell the awfully tragic stories. One is about a soldier from the Royal Fusiliers who was buried beneath a known unto God headstone in the Hooge Crater Cemetery near Ypres. And the other one returned home from the Somme battlefield in 1917 with a terrible head wound and in as many as 40 shrapnel wounds, yet somehow survived for 3 years before his death. And after his death, his wife did not register his demise with the commission, and until recently he was forgotten about and his name missing from the Commonwealth War Graves Commission records. But today we're going to put those tragedies right. We can't bring them back to life, but through talking to our guests on today's podcast, we can tell their stories and we can make sure that these soldiers, alongside all the others that fell in the Great War, their memories are brought back to life and we can remember them forevermore. So let's start with Nigel Marshall. And Nigel is a man from Yorkshire that a couple of years ago moved over to the Somme battlefield, where he's operating as an independent tour guide. And he discovered the story of a man also from Yorkshire called Fred Smith. And it's his story that I talked to Nigel about whilst we were on the Somme. We met on the Somme a couple of weeks ago. So a big welcome to the podcast today to Nigel Marshall. And Nigel, we're talking in the middle of the Somme battlefields, but Nigel is an independent battlefield guide. First of all, Nigel, tell us how you became interested in the Great War. How did you, what was your spark?
It's been something that's been with me all my life, 4 or 5 years old.
Really? Young as that?
Yeah.
Family member,
my granddad on my mother's side and his eldest brother both served in the Great War.
Yeah.
Uncle Sid, who was the eldest brother, he was the Royal Engineer's Signals. He served in Egypt, Gallipoli and Palestine.
Yeah.
Survived the war and then died of pneumonia on 22nd of November 1918.
Right, so he's a war casualty.
He's a war casualty, he's buried in Cairo.
Right.
His brother, my granddad, known in the family as Lou, but to his army friends as Fred.
Yeah.
Fred Kilkenny, he was a Leeds rifleman. He joined in September 1914, went across to France to Merville in April 1915 with the 49th West Riding Division. And he took part in a march up to the Ypres salient, served for a very short while in the canal zone, just north of Ypres.
Bosingay,
Yeah. Unfortunately, his health broke down while he was there. He got pyrexia of unknown origin, trench fever.
Right.
And was invalided back to the UK. Classified permanent base and spent the rest of the war as a permanent staff.
Right.
You know, member of the training staff.
But he got his medals.
Yeah. Yeah. The spring of 1918, he was sent to Ireland to Finna Camp in Donegal. But he seems to have spent a lot of his time while he was in Ireland in hospital in Enniskillen.
Right.
Not a well man. The pyrexia, the trench fever, really badly affected him.
Even though he'd picked it up 3 or 4 years before that.
Yeah. But he'd done all right. He came back. He was invalided as a rifleman, but he finished the war as a full corporal. So, he's,
yeah.
You know, he'd done okay.
Yeah. And that's your granddad.
That's my granddad.
So he had to survive then?
He did,
for you to be here?
Yes,
That's the thing, isn't it?
People often raise their eyebrows. I'm 52 and I have a grandfather who served in the First World War.
Yeah.
Now, he was 46 when my mum was born.
Right.
And my mum had me when she was 30.
So,
the
generation. It all fits, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, right. And did you know him then?
No, he died 9 years before I was born.
Right. Yeah. He's left that legacy, hasn't he?
It's a real shame, yeah.
Which has brought you here.
Yeah. But I knew his wife, my nana, his widow.
Right.
And
did she talk about him then and his stories?
Not proactively.
No, you had to.
If I gave her a nudge, she would talk about him.
Yeah.
Certainly not about the military side. It was only when pressed that she might talk about his military service.
Mm. And I think the reason that I contacted you is because looking at Twitter, or X as they call it now, I was reading down it just before Christmas, I think, wasn't it? And I saw a blog that you'd written about Sergeant Fred Smith.
Yeah.
And I was intrigued on this story for two reasons, really. One was because the awful circumstances in which he was invalided back to the United Kingdom.
Yeah.
And then the fact that he was forgotten about. And then the process that you've gone through to rectify that mistake.
Mm. Mm.
And it was those things put together that I thought would make an interesting story for our podcast listeners. So to start with, who was Fred Smith?
Fred Smith was just an ordinary Leeds man. He was a territorial soldier when he joined the army. He enlisted in 1913 and he joined the 8th Battalion of the Leeds Rifles. And the Leeds Rifles were affiliated with the West Yorkshire Regiment. He was allocated to the 1st 8th. The 1st 8th Battalion was posted overseas. Fred Smith contracted a skin condition which sent him into hospital. He missed the final phases of training before the battalion went overseas, and because of that he was then transferred to the 2nd 8th Battalion.
So he's away from his brother now?
He was separated from his brother at that point, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so his brother goes off to fight in France and subsequently Belgium. And unfortunately his brother George was killed.
Right.
Early in their deployment around Boozing of the Canal Zone, just north of Ypres.
Yeah.
And he's buried at Essex Farm Cemetery.
Oh, right, yeah. Where there's the memorial as well. To the
Exactly, yeah, yeah. 49th Division Memorial.
In the shadow of that memorial then.
That's it. Now, it's funny that we should meet on the 11th of January, because the 11th of January is the day that the 2nd 8th Battalion
come out to the Western
embarked for France.
Oh, right. So what year is that?
1917. January 1917.
Right, so that's 107 years ago today.
Yes. Yeah. Fred Smith is promoted sergeant, full sergeant, just days before they deploy.
Yeah.
You know, so
that was quite a lot, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's confirmed in the rank that he'd been acting up in.
Yeah.
They're in the village, which is relatively close to here, where we're talking about Heberton. As was the custom, the practice, newly arrived battalions were broken down into companies.
Yeah.
And they were, I call it, puppy walked through the trenches by an experienced unit.
Yeah.
And he did this.
So Heberton, for people that don't know, is near Gommecourt, which was the diversionary attack on the 1st of July 1916, which failed. And at this stage, the Germans are still in the same places as they were in the July.
Yeah.
Previous year up at Gommecourt there, and it's still a few weeks before the Germans evacuate the area and move back to the Hindenburg line. So this is effectively the northern part of the Somme battlefield.
Yeah, yeah,
the 1916, that's where they are.
Yeah.
But Heberton itself has been smashed to pieces at this time.
It has, yeah. There are photographs on the Imperial War Museum website, which show the main street. I've used one on the blog post itself. Shows the main street, there isn't a house on the street.
The church is gone.
With intact windows, intact roofs. It's been very, very badly.
But that was always in British hands, where that was behind the lines, the town of Heberton.
Yeah.
Was then, and still was until, of course, 1918. Yeah. But this is where he sent, Fred sent, and then split up. So he's missed the Battle of the Somme, and he's arrived in the dreadful cold. I mean, we've been complaining today. We've been going around the Somme today. It's been about -2, -3.
Yeah.
In that winter, it got down to -20, didn't it?
Yeah.
And this is his introduction to the Western Front.
Absolutely,
-20 at
Heberton. It was the worst winter, I believe, in 40 years.
Yeah.
Something like that.
So what happens to him then when he arrives?
He's been through this induction phase. Anyway, when the battalion is to deploy, he goes up to the line with the battalion in his company. And he's a sergeant, so he's got a fairly senior role within his, certainly within his platoon.
Yeah, he's got people looking up to him.
Yep. Now, he is going through the village of Heberton. There's a street kind of midway through the village, which leads up to the front line.
Mm.
And Wurzel Street Trench.
Yeah. Is that a communication trench then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because that runs through, looks like an orchard.
Yeah.
But where the green stands now
in the
village.
It's a pub on the corner.
It's just around about there.
Yeah.
And I would say they're no more than a few hundred metres from the rear area of the frontline trenches.
Yeah.
Now this is mid-afternoon. These men are going through the village, they're going up to the line, and the Germans decide to put a barrage down on the village. Some of the men who he is with are killed outright. Some of them are really quite seriously wounded. And Fred Smith himself is grievously wounded. He's got a really bad depressed skull fracture in his forehead bone.
Caused by the shrapnel.
Caused by a piece of shrapnel shell. Yeah. Anybody who's medically minded knows that the front forehead bone of your skull is probably the toughest and thickest part of your skull.
Mm.
You break that, you're getting some damage behind it.
Mm.
You know, so he's suffered brain damage, and he is desperately, desperately ill.
But it's not just one shrapnel wound, though, is it?
It's not. No. In the post-mortem in 1920, when he actually died, the doctor who examined him counted no fewer than 40.
Did they know that at the time, or were they just worried about his head injury?
They would have been, I would imagine, more deeply concerned about his head injury. Mm. His head injury was very, very serious.
Mm.
So much so that he needed to be kept in France in one of the major general hospitals on the coast.
Mm.
He had to be kept there for a period of time before he was stable enough to risk taking
going across
back
the
to
channel.
The UK.
Yeah.
He arrives in London and an operation is performed to remove fragments of skull from his brain.
Is he a married man?
Not at this point.
No?
No. No, he gets married in 1919 after his discharge.
Okay.
But at this point, he is suffering from a memory lapse, which, strangely enough, doesn't happen at the time of his wounding with the shell fire at the back end of January 1917.
Yeah.
He can remember things up until March.
Right.
And then it's a blank.
Really?
Yeah.
So if they've come over to France on the 11th of January, what date is it that he's wounded?
It's the back end of January, I think.
So he's had a couple of weeks then?
Yeah.
In the trenches?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So he would have been relatively familiar
with
the area.
But if you've got a shell fire coming in a surprise bombardment, it's indiscriminate. There's nothing you can do about it, is it?
Yeah.
You can know the trenches as well as you like.
Yeah.
This isn't a major battle. The Battle of the Somme is over.
Mm-hmm.
But this is the daily routine of killing and maiming, isn't it? All the way through the war.
Yeah,
and there
exactly
so he's
right.
back now to London, and he's given expert treatment by the sound
he
of
is.
It.
He is. He is. An operation is performed, presumably to take out any loose slivers of skull bone that are further damaging his brain. But it's clear that he has suffered brain damage. He's got a general debility about him. The decision to discharge him from the army is made relatively quickly. Certainly for a fit person, his family home was within a 10-minute walk of what is now St James's Hospital.
Yeah, in Leeds.
In Leeds.
Yeah.
But the hospital building that was in existence at the time had been commandeered by the War Office and was now a military hospital.
Okay.
So he was attending outpatient sessions there, and at one point is taken back into hospital because the silver cranial plate, the insert that he'd had put in, needed attention. He'd got a cranial abscess behind this plate, which was...
An abscess?
An abscess, yeah. It was infected. Oh. It was putting pressure on an already damaged brain. And really,
how much pain must this man have been in? And how must it have affected his relationship with his loved ones?
Yeah, exactly. He must have been in an excruciating pain.
This is what they dreaded most, isn't it? When you read the accounts of soldiers, and they're going up to the front line, they often say, what I was really scared about was being maimed,
yeah.
was being badly wounded.
Yeah.
They weren't scared of being killed.
Mm-hmm.
They were scared of, A, letting down their mates.
Yeah.
And firstly, and being maimed, blinded, losing limbs, that sort of thing. And this is what's happened to this to this Fred Smith, isn't it?
Yeah, that's exactly it. I mean, that those thoughts of being maimed
For life.
For life.
Yeah.
Really dogged people.
Mm.
And it's exactly what happens to Fred Smith.
Yeah.
You know, he's got this huge head wound right in the front of his skull.
Yeah. And must have been visible to people as well.
Well, that's it. Even with the presence of this silver cranial plate, there was a noticeable void in the front of his head.
Yeah.
You know?
So he wouldn't have wanted to go out.
No.
Into the streets. Not because people would stare at him. Reading another book, I can't remember which book it was, but someone said that the public would accept people without limbs, arms and legs missing, but facial injuries, they'd stop and stare at them.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. That's,
which is what this is.
That's why you get Dr. Gillis.
That was it.
Pioneering plastic
surgeon.
That was it.
That's where I read it, yeah.
And then if you come across to France, you've got three theatrical mask makers.
Yes, yeah.
Attaching porcelain masks to pairs of specs.
Yeah.
To mask and hide the obvious.
But in this case, it's not just facial, it's what's going on behind the skull, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can tell by the level of pension that he was awarded that the authorities, the army authorities, fully supported the theory that he would never work again.
So they've supported him as much as they possibly can with a pension.
Yeah,
and how old is he at this stage?
How old is he? He is, this is mid-1917, I believe it was, when he was discharged.
Right, so fairly quickly then.
He would have been, 24?
Right, so still a young man.
Yeah, yeah.
So he goes through this period of treatment that goes on for several years.
Well, he didn't really have several years, you know. I mean, he's grievously wounded at the beginning of 1917, and I mean, he dies in 1920. He dies in January 1920.
So what causes him to... The war ends in November 18, and over a year later, has he managed to work in the meantime? He's not. He's unable.
There's no evidence of any employment in his pension papers.
He's got married in 1919.
He gets married.
What's
in
his wife's name?
He marries Emily Alice Taylor.
Emily,
who is at 19. She's nearly 5 years younger.
Now, so it must have affected her seeing him like this. They must have met when he was wounded there.
Emily's an interesting girl, you know. I mean, she's 19, and she is prepared to take on this man who is still in a serious condition.
Yeah, yeah. It's a big ask for her, isn't it?
His prospects must have been severely restricted. Mm. You know, he couldn't work.
Yeah, she must have loved him very much.
Must have done. Now, aside from that aspect of her character being willing to take this man on who was probably going to be dependent on her.
Yeah, for a long time, as far as she was concerned.
She's born in the USA, which is unusual for that time.
Yeah, you know. Yeah. But then we come to, was it January 1920, did you say?
Yes.
Yeah. Must be close to the anniversary now, then.
It's funny. We are. I mean, you know.
Which we haven't planned.
It's
just the way it's panned out, isn't it? It's quite often the case, isn't it?
Yeah.
There's all sorts of coincidences. Yeah. What happens to him then? Well, what causes his demise?
He is still very, very ill. At the last appointment that he has, his award for his pension is for a period of 78 weeks. And this would have taken him up to April 1921. But if we come forward now to the 13th of January 1920, so just a couple of days from the anniversary, his wife has to send for a doctor.
Yeah.
Now, bear in mind that doctors had to be paid for.
Yeah, no National Health Service in those days.
She wasn't particularly well off. Her parents ran a fish and chip shop.
Yeah.
And they lived with her parents. Anyway, she sends for the doctor. The doctor comes, and it's at this point that he assesses Fred Smith. Fred Smith has got a recurrence of his cerebral abscess.
In his head,
And that was affecting his brain to the point where he was having convulsions. It's likely that the doctor who attended Fred Smith was not familiar with him, because he then goes on, after Fred dies, to give evidence at the inquest. And even though we're only reading a newspaper report, you can tell the shock.
Well, they're virtually word for word, aren't they?
Yeah, you can tell of the shock that's in his words.
Yeah.
So, potentially, the doctor, not being familiar with Fred Smith, doesn't know how to respond properly. to try and calm him down, to sedate him, the doctor administers morphine. Now, that's going to kill the pain, but morphine also affects...
It's a symptom. It's killing the symptoms, isn't it?
Yeah. It also affects your breathing.
Right.
The doctor may have been a little bit heavy-handed, perhaps.
Yeah.
And Fred Smith quite quickly goes into unconsciousness, which then progresses into coma.
Right.
And unfortunately, he doesn't emerge from the coma.
No.
And he dies.
At home?
He dies at home.
Yeah.
And he dies on the 15th of January, 1920.
15th of January.
Yeah.
And then, of course, this is well within the dates of the Imperial War Graves Commission, which is end of August 21.
End of August 21.
31st of August 21.
Yeah.
The cause of death was clearly as a result of his war injury.
Yes.
So those two criteria are met.
Yeah.
But that's not what happens, though, is it?
It's not. Whether it was perhaps naivety of a young widow, not informing the military authorities. Whatever happens.
It's not deliberate, is it?
No.
It's just a mistake.
It's an oversight. It's, you know, it's just one of those things.
So where's he buried?
He's buried in Leeds. He's buried in Beckett Street Cemetery, which is directly opposite the old Leeds War Hospital.
Okay.
A few dozen military graves in there from the First World War. But
does he have a headstone at all?
He does. Right. He does. Now, these headstones were double-sided.
Yeah.
And you could share
your
burial plot with up to, I think it's 38 people.
Blimey.
Yeah. But it overcame that stigma of not having a marked
grave.
Properly... Properly, these headstone or these burials were either called subscription burials or inscription burials.
Okay.
But a lot of them, and certainly the more commonly occurring name is the guinea grave.
Yeah.
Because your full subscription amounted to a guinea.
Yeah.
So okay. a pound and a shilling in old.
So there he goes. Got a headstone.
So Fred Smith is buried in one of these subscription graves.
Yeah.
And his headstone is in reasonably good condition.
Yeah, yeah.
Considering the trials and tribulations that this particular cemetery has gone through.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it does look.
It's been quite badly neglected. It's been vandalised over the years.
But you can clearly read the names on there, can't you?
But his headstone's in good.
But then the clock goes forward, and then you discover his story.
Yeah, the clock goes forward. For some reason, the paperwork wasn't completed.
No. There's probably a lot more of these that we still don't know about.
Oh, there will be.
Yeah.
You know, the Imperial War Graves Commission were not alerted to the fact that this man had
died. Wouldn't have known, because they're not the War Office.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, for 100 and some years, Fred Smith has a decent burial, but he hasn't got that dignity of being acknowledged as a casualty of war, which he clearly is.
Mm.
So, purely by accident, I came across the story in, I think it was the Yorkshire Evening Post or possibly the Leeds Mercury.
Right. It was in their archives, you were just
Yorkshire
looking through.
Evening Post. Yeah, it's the British newspaper archive. Which is, as very often happens, I was actually looking for something else.
Yes, that caught your eye.
And I came across this story, and the headline of the story grabs you. It just says, over 40 shrapnel wounds.
Shrapnel wounds, yeah.
Leeds man's death after terrible injuries.
Yeah.
So I read the story and my eyes were struck by the mention of the West Yorkshire Regiment and Leeds Rifles. A little bit dismayed that he has an extremely common name.
Yeah.
But
he
did have the rank of sergeant. So that narrows it down a little.
Yeah.
So
you couldn't find him on the commission's website.
Exactly. Your first instinct when you read about somebody dying is Commonwealth War Graves Commission. Let's go have a look. And I put every permutation of search in that I could think of, even down to the date of his death.
Yeah.
Nothing showed up.
You couldn't leave it at that, could you?
No, of course not. You can't. You're, I mean, you know, anybody who's done any research gets the teeth into something like this, and you've got to see
it. We're like dogs with bones, aren't we? Yeah,
absolutely.
But you found him, though. You found the evidence.
I did. I was really fortunate in that his pension records, service records have survived.
Oh, he was one of the few. Really was fortunate then.
So, I mean, we're talking about, what, one of the 30%?
At best.
So I read his story as far as the official records could give it to me. in conjunction with his inquest report, which was in the newspaper, it struck me that his cause of death was exactly the same as his cause of discharge. Chimed for me because I knew from previous cases that I've submitted that that is...
It's a direct result.
One of the criteria that has to be met.
Yeah.
So the next step is, you know, invest £11, get his death certificate.
Yeah.
His death certificate came back and it fully supported. There was absolutely no ambiguity about it. In fact, his death certificate, the cause of death, it's listed as a cerebral abscess due to and following gunshot wounds to the forehead received in action, army service, convulsions and coma.
This is categoric evidence because the dates stack up, the medical certificate, you've got the inquest report from the newspaper, and then you've then got to go to the commission, Commonwealth War Graves Commission.
Yeah.
And I know this is where a lot of people get frustrated because they put evidence that isn't strong enough, incontrovertible, but this is, isn't it? And what was that process that you went through then?
You couldn't wish for a clearer death certificate.
You've still got to go through the process.
You've got to go through the process. So what I do, I present the evidence.
Is there a website, a portal or something that you do?
There is.
Yeah.
There is.
I'll put a link to it on the website.
You know, there is a button you can click to submit a commemorated casualty. I initially wanted to send them the entire service papers and pension papers.
Mm.
I had his death certificate, I had census returns, because bear in mind we're dealing with a Smith.
Smith, yeah.
Really,
you'll prove it's the same man.
I had to prove he was the same man. And that wasn't easy, because at the time when Fred Smith enlisted into the Leeds Rifles, he was living at one address.
Mm.
By the time he died, he's living at a different address.
Which is usual, isn't it? People moved around.
Yeah. So, the way I was able to link that was by getting a copy of his marriage certificate. Thankfully, his father is listed on that, and he has a relatively uncommon name. I linked his father's name from the marriage certificate to the 1911 census.
Yeah.
The 1911 census showed the same address
as
Fred Smith's enlistment papers.
Right.
So we've got that.
You've got the circle. You completed the circle, haven't you? Yeah.
Fred Smith is shown as marrying...
Yeah.
Emily. Emily lived at Lloyd Street.
Yeah.
Lloyd Street is the address where he died.
We're on the death certificate, so that proves it.
We've got that route there.
Yeah.
Albeit a little bit circuitous, but we get there.
Yeah, no, it stacks up with everything else, doesn't it?
But I wasn't satisfied with that, so as well as submitting the evidence as bald, bare items of documentation, I always write a cover letter.
I was just thinking you needed some executive summary, really.
To explain.
Yeah.
Anybody who's done a maths exam,
show your work.
Show
your workings out,
So that's what I did.
I never showed mine, all wrong.
I went through the route
I bet they loved it, whoever was the...
This document links to that document and it proves this.
Oh, wow.
This document then links to that document and it shows this.
And you sent it off?
How long before
you got a response?
Well, I sent it off just days after the death certificate arrived because that was the
final
thing
piece
that I
of
needed
evidence.
To confirm.
Yeah.
And the death certificate is dated the 20th of July 2022.
Yeah.
The Commonwealth War Graves Commission acknowledged it as soon as I got it, and then anybody who's ever done one of these, it all goes silent.
Yeah.
And then, in December last year, I had an email from the inquiries team in Maidenhead, Commonwealth War Graves Commission, saying that the evidence had been accepted.
Wow.
Fred Smith was now commemorated as a casualty of war.
Yeah.
And despite showing them the picture of the headstone with the cemetery register, they were going to do their own investigations, presumably to make sure that the headstone either does or doesn't provide adequate commemoration.
Mm.
Now, the headstone's in pretty good condition, and given that the Commonwealth War Graves Commission only has to commemorate a casualty by name, it's entirely possible that they might not do anything in terms of adding a further marker. But then again, it's entirely possible that they might do.
Mm, mm. So that's still in abeyance then?
That's an ongoing process at the moment. Yeah. Right. I've still to hear back what they're going to do.
But he's now registered on the Commonwealth War Graves Commission website.
He's there, isn't he? If you look him up, he's in the UK Book of Remembrance,
which
is a temporary holding commemoration.
And how does that make you feel then, having taken this story on and seen it through over quite a long period of time?
It's satisfying, but I think the overriding feeling is one that this man has now got what he's deserved for 100 years.
Mm. It's closure, isn't it?
It's closure.
Wonder if he's got any family now.
I don't know.
No, it'd be impossible to find out with a name like that.
With a name like Smith, you
if anyone's listening to this podcast, then please do get in contact.
Yeah. it would be lovely.
It would, wouldn't it?
I mean, they're not going to be direct descendants. Fred Smith didn't have any children.
No, no.
His brother was killed, so he didn't have children.
No.
It's possible that there might be some.
Yeah. Well, if he hasn't, then at least you know that you brought him his memory
and
back to life.
It's this far removed from the time of his death. It's probably about as much as I can do for him.
Yes, it is, yeah.
But it's important still to do it.
But not only are we going to find him on the Commission's website, when now this podcast goes around the world and hopefully other people pass it on to other people, and he'll always be remembered now.
Well, that's it.
Won't he? He'll be remembered by us and other people.
Sometimes when I have to explain to people why I do this, for me there are two things that are important. He is now recognised as a casualty of war, which he undoubtedly is.
Of course,
You know, he died of wounds received in action.
He wouldn't have died had he not come out here to Heberturn.
True.
Unless he died of flu or something. You know, he wouldn't have died of that.
But as well as being commemorated, his grave now will be looked after, it'll be protected.
Mm.
If it falls into disrepair, it will be made good again.
Yeah.
He's not going to be forgotten about.
No.
You know, he spent a century, perhaps, being forgotten.
Yeah, being forgotten after his wife died. Yeah, that's right.
So
brilliant. Well, thanks very much for that. And we should say that we were talking before we started recording that you've moved out here to the Somme.
Yes.
And you're working as an independent battlefield guy. How can people get in contact with you through your website?
You can find me through my website. It's Marshall's Battlefields, www.marshallsbattlefields.com. Marshall's Battlefields, all being one word. No apostrophe. You can find me on the internet, and there is a contact form on the website.
You're on Twitter, aren't you?
You can find me on Twitter just by my name, Nigel Marshall.
Yeah.
I'm also on Facebook. I'm also on Blue Sky.
Blue Sky? What's Blue
Sky? Only just joined Blue Sky. It's very, very similar to how Twitter used to be.
Right. It's a calmer version of Twitter. Yeah. And it's not, although you live on the Somme, you cover not just the Somme, you cover Gartre and everywhere else, don't you?
Yeah. Basically, I can work in the part of France where British and Commonwealth forces served.
That's what your visa allows you to do.
Yeah. From the front line. I can work anywhere in France.
Yeah.
It's just that I...
That's your area of expertise.
Yeah, it's what I know about. Yeah. So, from the front lines back to the hospital cemeteries on the coast.
So, if anybody's coming over to the Somme independently and they want someone to take them around the battlefields, then please do contact Nigel. He's got the passion and the knowledge and the enthusiasm to provide, a wonderful service, and that's what it's all about, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thanks very much for that, Nigel.
It's a pleasure, Terry. Thank you.
Now, for this next story, it's slightly different because so many of those men that died in the Great War, as we know, are unknown. But every year, a number of amateur and professional historians undertake work to try and identify some of these men that are unknown. Vern Lipley is a very good friend of mine who I've worked with at Ledger on a couple of tours. And we're also closely connected together with the Army Benevolent Fund and the Frontline Walk. Vern has been both a guide and a participant on the Frontline Walk in recent years. And he tells the story in this next interview about how a chance discovery of a soldier from the Royal Fusiliers in Hooge Crater Cemetery sent him on a journey that he will never forget. And with both of these stories, the one that we've just been talking about with Nigel and the one that we're going to talk about now with Vern, the detail that we get about these men's lives really does bring it home to us, the tragedy and the sacrifice of the Great War. And also, you can hear the emotion in our voices
as we talk about these men that history had really forgotten about, but now through their efforts to bring their memories back to life, and hopefully through this podcast, they will never be forgotten. Let's have a listen to what Werner's got to say.
So for two years, I've been trying to get you on the podcast. I finally succeeded.
Have you? I know. Yeah, I was thinking that. Certainly, you've certainly achieved it with this one, haven't we?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. But in this episode, we're looking at soldiers that are either weren't previously commemorated by the commission, or who were commemorated by the commission, but in the wrong place. So I think in the case of Sergeant John Harold Bott, Distinguished Conduct Medal, Service Number 4169, 11th Battalion Royal Fusiliers, he falls into the second category, doesn't he? Where he was remembered on the Menin Gate. But Vern, I understand that you have discovered the actual burial place of this young soldier.
Yeah, that's right, Terry. It all came about in August 2018. We were involved in the Royal British Legion's Great Pilgrimage.
Yeah.
GP90, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And just opposite the cemetery, and this is Hooge Crater Cemetery on the Menin Road, it was something where the coaches were stopping. We were going through, and when you were on the Eat route, the Eat day, and then the other group were on the Song group, and the vice versa. It's where we were collecting the packed lunches from, and I remember I've always been fascinated, as you know, from a guiding point of view, about the sadness, I suppose, of the unknowns.
Yes.
You know, they were commemorated on headstones. For you know that you see some with unknowns and an unknown soldier of the Great War or something like that.
Yeah, about half of them fall into that category, don't they?
And that Hooge Crater is obviously something quite special to me in many ways, that cemetery. My family's been there. I just stayed up the road and with my wife and et cetera. And it's always been quite a special place. And I remember doing a talk for Birmingham WFA, obviously on one of their battlefield tours, talk about flamethrowers across the road and everything like that. And it was quite something. And I have always been saying, as you're fully aware with other Commonwealth War Graves Commissions, you can't look at the unknowns on the registers.
Mm.
You've got to go through a name, which then links to the attached grave registers. And
if you look at the burial report, you can see a named soldier, and then you can see who's buried next to it. And that's right, isn't it?
And I thought, well, I wanted something to talk about, as we all would do, you know, like as a not a show and tell, I suppose. And I always remember at the time, it was early August. We were going across in August of 2018. And I remember my parents had collected one of my children from school, and they take them back. And I had to go and get him from the house. And I thought, well, you know, I'm going to think about Hooge Crater, and we'll in particular look at have a look at some of the grave register reports for the knowns. And my lad sat on my lap. He's only about nine, young Ben. And he sat on my lap, and I said, Ben, I pulled up the list of Commonwealth War Graves for Hooge Crater with all the knowns. And he said, it's what was 7,000 graves. I think 70% of them are about unknown in that cemetery.
Yeah.
It's an awesome cemetery. And I said to Ben, Just pick me a name. And he went down the list and he scrolled through the list, you know, as they do with kids with the mouse, they're scrolling through. And he picked one particular name, and he picked Private Austin.
Okay.
Austen. Oh, I thought, well, that's coincidental. And I was quite smiled to myself. And unbeknown to Ben didn't know. I think it may have just been a coincidence. But he'd actually picked my middle name.
Right.
Same
completely at random. Completely at random.
Completely at random. And he didn't know that one.
Just check before we go any further, just so, because if we give the wrong number, I guarantee someone will pick us up on it. There's actually 5,916 servicemen buried in Hooge Crater Cemetery. And of those, over half of them, 3,570, are unidentified. Although we should say that's going to be one less by the time we finish with this podcast. That's all right. We got as far as Ben picked one at random, and he picked a soldier that had your middle name, Austin.
Yeah. He picked my middle name, and I must admit, I was quite okay.
Well, spooky.
What do you want? He said, I like that name. He said, I like that name. I went, okay. So then I thought, well, okay. So we clicked on it, and then I saw the grave reports, obviously with Private Austin. And next to it is there was two reports. There was the first report compiled in March 26th of March 1916, and the later, which is, you can see it's handwritten, and the later typed report from July 1920. And
but what we ought to do then is just explain to people how you get at these reports, because these aren't private reports, these are public, aren't they, on the Commonwealth War Graves Commission website?
Yeah, so obviously I clicked onto the name, obviously to Austin, onto Austin's name, but then takes you to Private Austin's grave page.
Yep.
Page.
And you go down to the bottom and there's some archives, aren't there?
And you scroll all the way down to the bottom and you can see the archives reports.
Yeah.
And so you've got the two register reports and obviously everything about headstone information or any other grave registration details. And I remember looking through and I saw the first one, I saw Austin is on the top of the list. And on the next one beneath it was an unknown Royal Fusilier with a Distinguished Conduct Medal on the remains. And that was on the one dated March 1919.
So that's the date that he'd have been buried or reburied in Hooge Crater.
Yes.
Most of these burials in there have been exhumed and concentrated from elsewhere on the Ypres Salient. Is that right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, okay. And I thought, oh, this is interesting. I thought there can't be many unknown Royal Fusiliers with the Distinguished. And then I looked at the subsequent report and it said the 11th Battalion, Royal Fusiliers, unknown Distinguished Conduct Medal ribbon on the tunic. So I thought, at that point, I started thinking about this, and I was going to say it became a bit of a consuming passion, I suppose.
Mm. Yeah, once something gets you, it gets you, doesn't it?
And it became quite a consuming passion. And then I started looking to it even more. And by the time we'd gone across to do GP90, I'd already started looking at it, thinking about it more and more. And then obviously I came across, started looking into the actual records of unknowns who are commemorated, who have no known grave within the Ypres Salient. And in particular, there's two. There's two on the Menin Gate. One was found, although the panel obviously was found towards 1926 and is actually buried in Sanctuary Wood Cemetery.
Okay.
But he is actually still on the panel of the Menin Gate.
Yeah,
so although he's on the Menin Gate as a Distinguished Conduct Medal winner, he's actually buried in Sanctuary Wood Cemetery. The only other name was the Sergeant J.H. Bott, Distinguished Conduct Medal ribbon, who was 11th Battalion, and he's on the Menin Gate, killed in August 1917.
So he was the only one that fit the criteria, what you were looking for.
Yeah, he fits the criteria. And when I subsequently did more and was able to identify that the only other possibility on the Menin Gate already had a known grave in Sanctuary Wood, and the fact that it tied with the 11th Battalion, when I looked further into it, and the war diary places them as you come across the road from the cafe to the cemetery.
Yeah.
You follow the wall down of the cemetery on the left-hand side, like we followed with the front line walk.
Yes.
Just that field to the left of us as we walk down the path to go on further down on that what we call the lovely final stretch.
Yeah.
In that field to the left is where Bott was found.
So this is the date that they were moving across this field was during the Third Battle of Ypres, Passchendaele, and this is in August 1917.
And I submitted the case. Obviously, I put my paperwork together and my case, I suppose, and my findings and my research. And I submitted it as case number 462 in September 2018.
Right.
And then off it went. And people I'd previously known, Andrew Thornton, obviously from the Old Contemptibles, obviously there's a lot of work with the Old Contemptibles.
Yep.
He'd advised me with something, and Andrew yet again, you know, was a godsend, and he'd had a case that had been gone through this process and had been identified, and that had taken 5 years, and he did say, you know, it could take a long time, Vern, and I said it'll be there. And subsequently then, ever since I've been on battlefield tours since, I've always, where possible, included the story of J.H. Bott, case number 462, where I can. And when I was we were over again with the Ledger Armistice tours in November 2018, I remember taking my group across the road into the cemetery. And I took them down to Private Austin's grave. and this unknown fusilier next to it. And I said, ladies and gentlemen, just so I explained a little bit about J.H. Bott, Sergeant J.H. Bott, my case, what I'd found, some of the aspects of how it came about, and anything like that. And I said, and what they, and that before to the tour, I'd been to Worcestershire Medals in Bromsgrove, and I'd got hold of a piece of Distinguished Conduct Medal ribbon, just a very small piece of ribbon.
Yeah.
And I said, whether I am successful, and this, bear in mind, this again, this was in November 2018. I said, whether I am successful or not with this, I think after all this time, this ribbon needs replacing. I remember putting the ribbon at the base of the semi of the headstone, put it at the bottom, and with a cross, I remember, sorry, ladies and gentlemen, I'm now going to replace the ribbon. And I remember putting the ribbon and getting the cross and placing it and pushing it in.
On a little wooden cross.
Then, yeah, which is one of the wooden crosses, and symbolically replace the ribbon. And I must admit, when I remember looking back and looking, everybody just, it was one of those moments in those cemeteries that was quite special to me. And then obviously we continue and we carried on. And as you're saying, I've had that story quite dear. Again, obviously when we were on the Army Benevolent Frontline Walk in October last year, just before we crossed over onto that final stretch to head towards the Menin Gate, I told everybody about that story, and it was, it was quite something. And 2 weeks ago, I was at work and I saw an email. I saw my email pop up and I thought, oh, what's this? And I saw, dear Vern, regarding your case number 462 from, we agreed to accept the fact that this is Sergeant J.H. Bott Distinguished Conduct Medal. Wow. And the rededication ceremony will be on the 20th of March this year. And I must admit, I tried to, afterwards, because I was in a team meeting at the time, and I tried to explain it to people, and they were, I don't really think they got the true gist of what happened. It was only afterwards, subsequently, I had to explain to somebody that, that this he's been in an underground grave marked as an unknown since March 1919, and it could be later than that or earlier than that, obviously from the dates. And I said, and just short of 105 years later, he will have a known headstone.
How did you feel? What emotions were going through your brain at that
point? I think we've all had very special moments in war cemeteries and tours and trips and sometimes, and it was one of the most special moments I'd had for a long time.
You weren't even there, were you? You're in a sanitized office thinking about something else, and suddenly your mind had gone back to, to what year was it? 19...
Yeah.
When it was 2018,
when I first thought about it. But again, and it went back to obviously thinking about when the fact that they'd been, you could imagine them recording this detail in March 1919 and the battlefield clearance. And it's quite, and I remember thinking, wow. And subsequently, in that week, from that Monday, from the identification, obviously the notification that the dedication would be, the rededication would be happening. Later that week, my father is quite a keen genealogist and does a little bit of, research. And he'd found a newspaper obituary from Sergeant Bott's mother.
Okay. Yeah.
Recording, obviously the sadness of losing her son killed in Ypres in August 1917, and also her second son killed in March 1918.
So John Bott has got a brother that was killed in the following year. So mum's lost two boys.
And the two of them, one was buried as an unknown.
Yeah.
The other one was buried as a known amongst other unknowns.
Okay.
21st of March. And actually on his grave register records, it says buried by the Germans.
Oh, really? Yeah, as they've gone forward. And,
and underneath it said Cobridge. And I thought, where's Cobridge? And I saw it was Staffordshire.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, I know somebody from... And somebody I talked to previously about this case, a gentleman called Jeff Mayer. And a friend of Ian Hodgkinson, a friend of both of us.
Yeah.
And I dropped him a line one night on the Thursday night, and I said, look, I've had this case confirmed, and it's from Cobridge. And within about 20 minutes, he came back to me and he said, I've got a photograph of him.
That's how you found the photo. I'm looking at his photo now, and he's 20 years old, but he looks about 12, doesn't
Yeah, and you can
he?
see the cigarette coming out of his mouth, and
That's
I'm saying,
right. He's got a corner of his mouth. Yeah.
Sergeant with the Distinguished Conduct Medal
I
ribbon
tell you what, as
over the
well,
Distinguished
looking at
Conduct.
his photo, which I'll put on the podcast website, doesn't fit. His tunic doesn't fit, does it? It's too big
No,
for him.
it's just too big.
Yeah.
And I overall have started, just like in a nice way, I've started to reflect on this quite a lot. And obviously, I've been quite moved by it.
So he's been the headstone has been rededicated on the 20th of March this year, obviously at Hooge Crater, and it's at 2:15. And there are two other rededications, or there's a blessing of some remains at the Butte New British Cemetery, and there's a rededication that day also at the same cemetery before the before everyone has lunch and then moves over to Hooge Crater in the afternoon. I know you're hoping to be there, aren't you? You should be there.
And as I'm saying, it was quite something. And I know, obviously, I know that how it all comes together and things. And when you look at it and you think, and I looked where those other two, and I remember talking to my young lad about it, who's what now 14, and I said to him, look, Ben,
It's because of him, wasn't it?
this is because of you.
Yeah.
This is, and I said, okay, you pick the name. And I said, because of you picking that name and me subsequently following it up and doing a little bit of work with it,
Yeah.
I said he's had been buried as an unknown for around 105 years. And subsequently, he is now, from obviously the 20th of March, is going to have a headstone with his name on for eternity. So I
Perpetuity.
said, he should be really proud of that. And he looked at me the other day and he went, should we go and find another one, Dad?
Oh, really? Yeah. Wait another 5 years.
And I smiled to myself and I thought, yeah. And
That means he's got the bug, though, doesn't it? Because that means that when me and you are done and we're sitting in a nursing home dribbling, it means hopefully that Ben and all his friends and family will be doing what we're doing now.
there's a lovely photograph. We took my sons to Ypres 2013, I think 2013, 14. One of them laid a wreath with his late grandfather at the Menin Gate. That was Matthew. And Ben, they were both in Hooge Crater. And I'll send you the photographs of it. And there's a photograph where Ben's got his head and it looks like he's getting solemn reflection. It's not, he's upset because we wouldn't let him jump in the muddy puddles in front of, the muddy puddles in front of the
Well, you'd only
graves.
been about 5 years old or something,
He was
wouldn't
only around five.
you?
And I talk about this when I'm with Western Front Association groups. And I must admit, when I look back now, I think it was the wrong thing to do.
Yeah, but it's part of it's all part of the process, isn't it? It's all
It's
part of
all
the
part of
process
the
when you
process.
change.
And it's such a lovely photograph of with him with his head down in this
Yeah.
cemetery. And obviously you can see, and I always use it as when I, any other questions, ladies and gentlemen,
Yeah.
As part of my closing slide, he's always part of that closing slide
But
of
can you
him looking
imagine though?
down.
Just imagine all those blokes, they'd have been laughing their heads off.
And when I
Wouldn't
look back now and think,
they? They'd have been laughing their heads off, because
they're
that's
even laughing. And it's that lovely poem, isn't it? Don't hold your head in shame. Laugh and all the smoke and all the thing. And I look back now and think, wow. And subsequently, he's been there with his school and things like that. It's quite,
That's good. Hey, before I forget then, a bit more about John Bott, the newspaper article, I don't think I've seen it. Have you got it to hand?
Bott, in loving memory of Sergeant J.H. Bott, DCM, killed in action August the 10th, 1917. Also, his brother, Private H.E. Bott, killed in action March 21st, 1918. Beloved son of Mrs. Warrender, 26 Douglas Street, Cobridge. Days of remembrance too sad to forget, never forgotten my mother and all at home.
So what else do we know about John then? He wasn't married, was he, by the sound of it?
No.
What did he do we know what how and where and what were the circumstances for his DCM award, Distinguished Conduct Medal?
He enlisted September 1914, was 21 years of age. Previously to enlisting, he was in business as a hairdresser. His brother in the North Staffs Regiment, Sergeant Bott, was awarded the Distinguished Conduct Medal for conspicuous bravery in September 1916 and was also recommended for a commission.
So that's from the newspaper article.
that feeling of when they suddenly, I got that email.
Yeah.
I was like, it was like, we got plans for the week, man. I think I might be going to eat. I think I might be going to eat. I
Don't
just got
tell
this.
me you were speechless.
I was.
People, anyone that knows Vern listening to this will know that this doesn't happen very often.
And I
wonder, just one thing, the other thing I thought, does John Bott have any family that we know of now that still live in the area that maybe you're going over
I
with
don't
him?
know. I don't know. And
the search is on for relatives. And the other thing is, when it does happen on the 20th of March, for people that can't be there, you'll be there. And hopefully we'll have to get someone to record the ceremony as well, so that we can turn that into...
It's been a long time coming.
Yeah.
It really has. And it's one of those that's such a lovely story. And the nice thing about it is that it's such a nice story. And it, as you know, and I'm a firm believer, I've always have been, and, you know, explore, learn and share, which I took from Bruce Simpson, the chair, well, who was previously a chairman of the WFA. And I was talking to him when I saw him at Western Front's talk last year about how important it is to share. And as you're saying, it's such a lovely story that anybody can go in and say, this headstone is new.
Yeah, follow that process. I mean, I think in this case as well, you know, you've done a fantastic job here, but straight away, the fact that it was a soldier from the Royal Fusiliers that had died on that day, no known grave, and he'd been awarded the DCM, it meant it could only have been him, couldn't it? It meant there was no argument. Could it have been, Lance Corporal B or Sergeant C? It couldn't have been. It could only have been him, couldn't it, in that grave?
So the one missing point from Bott's story was his citation for his award of the DCM, the Distinguished Conduct Medal. And his citation was published in the London Gazette in November 1916, and it simply said, for conspicuous gallantry in action, he led a bombing party with great courage and determination, capturing an enemy machine gun and killing the team. And I had a quick look in the records, and his battalion at that stage was involved in the Battle of the Somme. And I think, I'm not absolutely certain, but I think looking at the timings, he was involved in the capture of the Teepvale Ridge, which we covered in a previous podcast. And that's probably where he carried out the action that resulted in him winning or being awarded the DCM. So thanks once again to both Nigel and Vern for joining me on the podcast this week. I'm sure you agree they're two incredible stories that we talked about, one of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of stories that are yet to be discovered. And as we go forward with Tales from the Battlefields, we'll look to tell more of these stories. But for now, just thank you very much for tuning in. There's going to be in the next few days a special episode, a shorter episode, when I'm going to pay tribute to the famous author Martin Middlebrook, who's known probably to everybody that's listening to this podcast, who wrote that book, The First Day on the Somme. And that will be available in the next few days. And we're going to finish as usual with the playing of The Last Post. And we're playing that this week in memory of the two soldiers that we've talked about, John Bott and Fred Smith.